to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. Here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And sitting in for James Edwards, I'm co-pilot Bill Rowland, welcoming you, our audience, to the political cesspool. We hope we provide you tonight with an informative and entertaining show, and certainly we're looking forward to bringing you some news and bringing you some information. James is on a weekend retreat with his lovely wife this weekend, so he's not available. But however, we do have with us tonight another co-host, Winston Smith. Winston, how are you?
I am very well, Bill. I see you survived our rough weather yesterday, as did we. It was very impressive, the weather we had yesterday here in this area.
Exactly. Well, we're actually broadcasting from the heart of darkness. This is the Voice in the Dark radio tonight, because I'm actually broadcasting from a location that has no power. So it's a good thing you don't need power to do, or you don't need visuals to do radio, because we'd be out of luck then. But we are broadcasting literally from the heart of darkness here in Shelby County, Tennessee. Winston, tonight we're going to have open mic night. We're going to have open mic night, and it's guest appreciation night and caller appreciation night. So we want callers to be calling in after the 7 o'clock hour. I think we have a caller calling in at 7:30. Our own Pete Stanton will be calling in at 7:30. But during the whole hour, 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, we want callers to call in with their opinions, with their ideas, with their thoughts, with their suggestions, and so forth, and we'll be glad to take those calls. And, of course, you can reach us at 1-866-986-6397. That's 1-866-986-6397, and that is after the 7 o'clock hour. Of course, at 6:30, we have our own Keith Alexander coming on to tell us what's going on behind the lines. And I think I talked with Keith earlier today, and certainly what he's got to talk about is very interesting and brings up an interesting sort of double standard. So, you know, it's a pretty impressive week in terms of news. A lot of things happened, of course, some disturbing things, some good things, but I think the most important thing that happened this week, as far as we are concerned, the good news being the outcome of the European Parliament elections. Winston?
Bill, you're absolutely right. But before I get into that, I did want to clarify something for our audience. During the first hour, at the bottom of the first hour, Keith Alexander will be coming on the broadcast with his installment of Behind Enemy Lines, in which he will discuss exactly what you talked about, Bill. And then at the bottom of the second hour, that's when our own roving correspondent, Peter Scoop Stanton, will be filing his report. So that's Keith Alexander at the bottom of the first hour and Scoop Stanton at the bottom of the second hour. And as you said, it's open mic during the second hour, and we're looking forward to that. We don't do that as often as we like, but tonight it's happening because, Bill, we are piloting the CSS cesspool, and that's the way it's going to be.
Exactly. But as I said, the good news for our audience tonight, well, we hope it's good news for our audience tonight, is that the right really climbed to a great triumph in Europe in terms of the European Parliament elections. Either center-right or right-wing parties, or we might say in parentheses there, conservative parties, elected to membership or will now have members in the European Parliament, approaching 54% or over 54% of the representation. Now, this is good news because many of these new members to the European Parliament are actually against the consolidation of Europe under a European Parliament government. So it's going to be a very, explosive and interesting sessions that the European Parliament holds, considering that many of the members will be coming in who are opposed to their countries belonging to the European Union. What do you think, Winston?
It certainly will be, especially when you have someone as bulldoggish as Nick Griffin striding into the European Parliament, and he will tell you in no uncertain terms that the BNP does not want England in the European Union. He and the BNP sees the European Parliament for exactly what it is. It is an abdication of national sovereignty of every country that participates in it, and he and the BNP want to get England out of the very body into which he has been elected. And if anybody can do it, it's going to be Nick Griffin. Bill, the obstacles and the attacks that these rightist political parties, and especially the BNP, endured during this campaign have been nothing short of horrendous. They have been filthy. They have been vile. They can be characterized by absolute hatred, lies, vitriol, slander, libel, and yet still the BNP pulled out two victories for the European Parliament. And you can see the effect that those two gentlemen, Nick Griffin and Andrew Bronze, yeah. That you can see the effect that they're having. You can see the effect at the very beginning when Nick Griffin strode onto the dais there with all the winners, and they all turned their backs and walked off. And of course, they have their no platform policy. They do not want the BNP to have any platform whatsoever to speak or defend themselves. They will gladly tell lies about the BNP. They'll gladly tell lies about Nick Griffin. But when it comes to actually debating them and seeing what these gentlemen and what the party has to say, they want nothing to do with it. So they walked off. And during one interview, Nick Griffin said he was glad they did that because it spared him the disgust of having to be up on stage with those two political parties, Labour and the Tories there in England, who have done so much to run England into the ground, and they have done so much to turn England over to anybody but the English. And I, for one, am so proud of Nick Griffin and the BNP for the way they withstood these attacks that would cause a lesser man or a lesser party to simply wither up and die. Bill, were you amazed at the depths to which the BNP's opponents sank during this campaign?
No, I'll tell you though, the BNP victory, more than the victories of any of the other rightist parties in Europe, including the United Kingdom Independent Party, which is also, I think, is going to pick up 17 delegates in the European Union Parliament. There have been pretty strong and pretty damning accusations that that UKIP, the United Kingdom Independent Party, is actually just a creation of the establishment to take votes away from the BNP. We'll let the future decide that question. However, the BNP is clearly the wooden stake through the heart of leftism in Europe, particularly in Britain. The literally panicked, hysterical reaction to the BNP is only an indication that the BNP's platform, it resonates with the British people. And the problem for the left is that since the BNP has now been elected to the European Union, they will receive proportional funds for future campaigns and for the operation of staff and for the creation of offices in Europe. So, you know, the BNP is going to benefit from a windfall, I think, of over £5 million. I'm not sure whether it's £5 million or $5 million, but they will get a huge windfall plus funds for a staff. Now, the reaction to the British government to the success of the BNP has not been to stand down, take off their hat, and say, well, maybe next time we'll win. We congratulate the BNP for their victory. They've continued with the rhetoric that the BNP is a gang of thugs, a gang of fascists, which is really funny because the BNP campaigned using the image of Winston Churchill and a Spitfire fighter in the Battle of Britain and so forth, the very thing that kept fascism out of England. Whereas the left is acting much more like fascists or Bolsheviks than the BNP ever acted. But nevertheless, the BNP has so shocked them and so dismayed them that now the British government is considering legal ways to strip the BNP of its seats and, in fact, is even discussing outlawing the BNP as a party and trying to come up with votes to outlaw the BNP outright. So that's the desperation with which the left is acting. It's very much the same desperation that has been used against Geert Wilders in the Vlaam Belang and his victory in Belgium to a seat the Netherlands and I think he's the Netherlands, but anyway, his victory gaining a seat in the European Parliament. And yet this man, who is now a parliament member of the European Parliament, is banned from travel into Britain. He has been literally banned, and he cannot enter Britain. He's barred from entering Britain. So this is the kind of hysteria and the kind of psychosis that has gripped the left with the successful rise of the right. And the left knows perfectly well that the BNP was the point of penetration for the true right in Europe, that they are the spearhead, and that once they gain two seats, the gap and the wound will open even wider in the gut of the left. They're in big trouble, and they know it. They know now that popular support could grow for the BNP, and they have to do everything possible to discredit it, even
That's
though
right.
the Labour government
is completely
scandalized.
All right, folks, stay tuned for more of the Political Cesspool.
We'll be right back. We'll be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Well, not exactly. This is the co-pilot of the political cesspool, Bill Rowland, sitting in tonight for James Edwards, who is taking a break over the weekend with his wife. And with me tonight is Winston Smith, and just before the break, we were talking about the BNP victory in Europe and the placement of two BNP members into the European Parliament. Once again, as far as we're concerned, a dramatic and very, very positive development in Europe. Winston, what do you think?
I couldn't be happier about it, and I hope this has some influence here in America as well. We need Americans who are like Nick Griffin. We need Americans who are like Andrew Bronze. We need Americans who are prepared to say that white people in this country have rights. And when the framers of our Constitution signed that Constitution, the preamble of which they addressed to themselves and their posterity, Bill, they were thinking of people like you and me. They were thinking about your wife and your children, my wife and my children. They weren't envisioning a Barack Obama. They weren't envisioning a Sonia Sotomayor. Bill, one of the things that has kind of fascinated me about the BNP victory is the interviews that Nick Griffin has been giving, and I dare say he has been enduring. I've noticed that when Nick Griffin goes into an interview and when he makes an assertion, the person doing the interview demands proof. Nick Griffin will say something like when they were having their press conference outside of at Westminster there, and they were attacked by that mob of violent Labor Party activists who were throwing eggs and bricks and sticks at them. Nick Griffin made the assertion that the police had probably been ordered to stand down and not to protect the BNP members. And of course, the person doing the interview demanded proof of that. And Nick Griffin, of course, provided proof of that. That area at Westminster is one of the most heavily guarded areas on earth, and they have scores of police officers there to prevent from happening exactly what happened. And yet they did nothing. They stood back and watched. So whenever Nick Griffin gives an interview and he makes an assertion, he is required to provide proof. However, when the dimwit, the numbskull, the leftist scum who organized that attack on Nick Griffin and Andrew Bronze, when he made his assertions during an interview, he was not required to provide any proof whatsoever. They simply lobbed his softball questions at him and took whatever he said as gospel truth. Now, one of the things that happened in the aftermath of the BNP's winning two seats in the European Parliament was the attack that I just told you about. Nick Griffin and Andrew Bronze were at Westminster, and they were giving an interview, and this labor-backed, labor-funded mob of thugs attacked Mr. Griffin and Mr. Bronze with eggs, bricks, sticks, and signs. And the cameras caught one very small young lady I won't call her a lady, but they caught one very small young woman approaching Nick Griffin as his bodyguards were hustling him and Mr. Bronze out. And the bodyguard simply wrapped his right arm around this woman. He put one hand on her down by her rib cage and his forearm up around her head, and he just literally threw her out of the way. And a lot of the British media went bonkers over that, saying that bodyguard had treated her in a thuggish, unacceptable manner, as if she were just some kind of passerby. In fact, one media type over there referred to her as simply a passerby. But we found out later that she was part of that mob. She was one of the attackers, and her purpose was to run interference. Her purpose was to stand in front of Nick Griffin and slow him down. Now, Bill, what they were counting on was Nick Griffin reacting to his more gentlemanly instincts. He saw they expected him to see this small young woman there, and they expected Nick Griffin to simply stop and not be impolite to her, because after all she was just a passerby. But he was being excoriated for his bodyguard doing the right thing, and as I said, we found out she was one of the attackers. She wanted to slow him down to put him in greater jeopardy. Her job was to run interference to slow him down so that he could be an easier target for those weapons they were hurling. Now, they were counting on Nick Griffin being a gentleman. They were counting on him deferring to his more gentlemanly instincts. But fortunately, his bodyguard, who has now been fully vindicated, did the right thing. And Nick Griffin did the right thing by following the lead of his bodyguard. And that woman, she has no right to be called a young lady. She has no right to any sort of courtesy whatsoever, because she was there to place Nick Griffin and Andrew Bronze in greater peril. So it was the BNP who was found to be right, and they did the right thing in defending themselves. The BNP defending themselves, and by God, the BNP can be counted on to defend Britain as well. Bill?
I think we're coming up on a break in a minute, but I'll just say this, that had the police done their job, there would be no need for Nick Griffin to surround himself with bodyguards to fight their way through a mob of Bolshevik, instigators and troublemakers and thugs. The real term thug belongs to the Labor Party, because I can't think of an instance or case where Nick Griffin or the BNP have ever acted in a thuggish manner, except perhaps in self-defense. And yet it's the left that's always inciting thuggish, riotous behavior, and yet, of course, they're the darlings of the press and the victims, perpetually the victims of violence and so forth. I think there were even accusations that one of the cars driven by a BNP member ran over two people in the street some rumor of that. How true that is, we don't know. Of course, they probably just threw themselves up against the car and rolled around on the ground screaming, which is typical leftist behavior, too, is to fake an injury or fake an attack on themselves. Meanwhile, they're pelting people with eggs and throwing bricks and rocks and muscling up and beating up old ladies.
Well,
so we know the tactics of the left. We've seen them often enough. And the truth is, had there been 100 BNP members there, they wouldn't show their faces. They'd be hiding somewhere. But as soon as they think they can bully somebody or they can gang up on people, that's where you see the left being big, brave, tough guys, is only when they outnumber somebody, 10 to 1, and gang up on them. They don't behave that way when they're faced with equal numbers. They hide behind telephone poles or skulk off somewhere. So they're cowards, but they're also thugs. They beat up old ladies, children, and they mob people. And that is the very definition of thuggish behavior.
It is, Bill, and that we see that the left in England, just like the left here in the United States, is being exactly what they claim the opposition is being. For all the invective, all the venom being spewed out upon the BNP about them being a gang of thugs, they are probably the most refined and the most cultured among the political people there in England, and it is the left. It is the establishment elite tick-like embedded politicians who are behaving exactly like the thugs. As you said, Bill, they have become everything that they say they hate, and it's just like the left here in the United States. They have become everything that they claim to dislike. They have become everything that they claim to hate. And whenever they start pointing their fingers at people and hurling names like fascist and Nazi and Bolshevik and thuggish behavior, they got four other fingers pointing back at them. We have to go to our second break for this evening, folks. When we come back, we will welcome the political cesspool's intellectual great white shark, Keith Alexander, who is behind enemy lines here on the political cesspool with Bill Rowland and Winston Smith. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
And welcome back to the political cesspool. I am co-pilot Bill Rowland, co-hosting here tonight with Winston Smith. And coming up is our favorite man behind enemy lines, Keith Alexander. Keith, are you on the line with us? Hello, Keith.
Yes. How are you doing, Bill?
We're doing great. What have you got for us from behind enemy lines tonight?
Well, it's kind of a follow-up on last week's program, Bill. Last week we discussed a program that was featured in the daily newspaper here in Memphis, Commercial Appeal, called the Memphis Prep Program. And it's an affirmative action program to try to get black kids elite educations at prep schools in the Northeast, like Phillips Exeter Academy, Phillips Academy, and Choate Hall. And also to then move them on to elite colleges and universities like Harvard, Yale, Stanford, and Duke, so they can in turn have elite careers, the type of careers that everybody many people strive for, but they want to give special advantages to minority, and particularly black students here in Memphis. We do, you know, blacks are the, not the minority, but the majority, so most of the efforts towards minority recruitment, of course, are focused on blacks. And today we're going to talk about not only the Memphis Prep program, but also a program that probably casts a wider net, catches more people than something for elite educational opportunities, and that would be the Ritchie case that's coming up before the Supreme Court, which involves firemen taking an exam to become lieutenants in order to be promoted and have a better career. And again, because of affirmative action, the New Haven, Connecticut Fire Department throughout all the test results, when the test results came back and it showed that 14 whites and one Hispanic were going to get the promotions and no blacks were going to get any. See, this is the kind of heads I win, tails you lose regime that whites across the board are facing in this new politically correct atmosphere that we live in today.
Well, Keith, this is Winston. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you.
Excellent. By the way, I had a good lunch with you this past week.
Well, I enjoyed it. Always do.
Folks, I wish you had the perks that I have being a political cesspool co-host. I mean, I get to have dinner with Bill Rowland and have lunch once a week with Keith Alexander, and I get to meet occasionally with our production staff. Sometimes I am forced to hang around with James Edwards, but that's not too often, and that's just the way we like it. But Keith, you and I have been discussing these programs here in Memphrica that pretty much take money away from white kids and give it to the education of black kids. I think we have another example of this, not in Memphrica, but in Dallas, where the school superintendent there, Michael Hinojosa, he makes over $300,000 a year, and yet his son is going to an elite Ivy League school under a program that is supposed to be for disadvantaged minorities. Now, this kid, whose father makes over $300,000 a year, who went to an elite prep school, but he does not need this money, and yet he's getting it. Now, I can sort of see that happening in Dallas, but here in Memphis, to be taking money away from white kids and giving it to black kids to go to school, should we be mad about that? And why should we be mad about it, Keith? Why shouldn't black kids be taking money away from the education of white kids?
Well, the reason we should be mad about it, Winston, is because it's racial discrimination, pure and simple. I think.
No.
What happened? You know, I don't believe that back in the Civil Rights Movement, was selling the changes it was proposing on the assumption that somehow we're going to replace one type of racial discrimination with another. The whole purpose, as it was advertised, was to eliminate racial discrimination. Now, black children get preference over white children, and it's not something that is unique to either Dallas or Memphis. In any community where there is a substantial minority population, whether it's Hispanic or black, you're going to see programs like the Memphis Prep Program. There's another program that I came up with in the newspaper in Memphis this week by what is called a silk stocking law firm, a top-line corporate law firm called Baker Donaldson, in which they have the headline is Baker Donaldson Beefs Up Diversity Initiatives. And we'll go into that a little bit too, but apparently they're trying to go all the way back to college and beg, plead, and encourage black kids to go to law school. It says here, Baker Donaldson offices visit schools each year and hold question and answer sessions for minority students who have even a scintilla of interest in going to law school. In other words, they're doing their best to get these kids elite college and university positions and to get into law schools and whatnot. And they're doing this because they want a foreordained result. They want a certain critical mass of black lawyers. They're not willing to let nature take its course and let kids, black kids, for example, go into whatever course of study they want to go into. They want them in elite positions. They probably have something like this for the engineering profession. They certainly have it for the doctors and the medical professions. They want these people represented come hell or high water.
Well, Keith, to get into these programs, does academic achievement count for anything, or is it how does a black kid get access to these programs?
Well, I guess academic achievement does come into it, but it's in a race-normed fashion. Race norming, for example, would say we're going to take and consider the top 20% of white kids and then the top 20% of black kids. But unfortunately, the problem with that is that it's a race-conscious solution. The top 20% of black kids may not have scores or academic credentials on a par with the top 20% of white kids or the top 20% of Asian kids. But it doesn't matter to these social engineers that think that they need to have a certain critical mass of minorities in every profession and in every desirable job and in every desirable school.
What has been the track record of these programs so far? Are they producing the product that they are supposed to be producing?
Well, not really. And see, this is a problem. And all that does, that doesn't cause the people that run these programs to say, well, maybe we need to rethink this and reconsider it. Maybe we need to stop trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, and maybe we need to back off. No, that just makes them redouble their efforts because they are not going to be denied. There was an article in the Harvard Crimson recently where a black female student from a program like the Memphis Prep program that served the Bedford-Stuyvesant area in New York City was responsible in some way for a murder on the campus because she brought her ghetto boyfriend, who is a rap singer and music producer and songwriter, onto the campus, and he wound up killing somebody on the campus, and they have blocked the girl from graduating because they apparently feel there must be some complicity here. Now, see, this is one of the results that you get from having these type of programs. And there are other ones. In this Memphis Prep article, they talk about a fellow I won't name him, but he was in the first class of the Memphis Prep program back when it was called the Volunteer Placement Program in 1968. One of the sponsors, one of the charitable sponsors of this program is the Plow Foundation, named after Abe Plow, who is a successful Jewish businessman who has the Shearing Plow Pharmaceutical Firm, which is headquartered in Memphis. Well, this fellow, who was in the 1968 class of the Memphis Prep Program, or its predecessor, is a compliance officer with Shearing Plow. Basically, that means he's responsible for seeing that they get enough black people in the workplace. In other words, it's a make-work job that they made for this guy, even after he'd gone to, I think it was Rosemary Hall, the same prep school where the Kennedys went, even though he went to Harvard or Yale. When he comes out, they're still having to make work for it.
Well, Keith, we're coming up on a break for this segment. Can you stick around?
Sure.
All right.
I'm glad to.
Folks, you're listening to The Political Cesspool tonight, hosted by Bill Rowland and Winston Smith. And we're talking with Keith Alexander, who is behind enemy lines. Stay with us, folks. Be right back after the break.
And Winston and Bill, you better be there.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
We know you're out there. We can hear you breathing. This is Bill Rowland. I'm the co-pilot of the Political Cesspool, here tonight with my co-host and good friend Winston Smith and our guest from behind enemy lines, Keith Alexander. Just before the break, we were talking about the various programs that schools and professional organizations and law firms and other groups are using to promote minorities, generally unqualified minorities, in my opinion. But, Keith, you know, talking about these various programs, these various scholarships, these various projects to promote minorities and get them out of their situations and to promote them into, you know, exclusive, really exclusive environments. You know, my question is, what difference does it make? Why should it make a difference to us, after all?
Well, it makes a difference in a multitude of ways, Bill. First of all, somebody finances all of these programs, and they do it basically by appealing to charities, most of whom are white charities. Black charities, you know, aren't really involved in this. The whole purpose is a wealth transfer from the white community to the black community. And in the Memphis Prep program, for example, the whole thing is basically supported by four major charities. One is the Children's Foundation, which is an old white upper crust high society group that used to fund the Crippled Children's Hospital in Memphis, and now they're doing this. Secondly, you've got the Junior League, the grand dame of all high society charities. It's a nationwide outfit, and the Memphis branch helps support this Memphis Prep program, and then the Memphis Rotary Club, which is a kind of mainstream, you know, all businessmen, jolly good fellow type of thing. And then there's the Plow Foundation, which is one Jewish charity out of the bunch. The others are white Gentile charities, primarily. And the money that they normally would provide for scholarships is being siphoned off and commandeered by programs like this. So the result is there isn't scholarship money available for white kids. And as a result, white kids with higher standardized test scores on the ACT or the SAT or the LSAT, for example, for law school, are not getting to go to the the elite schools. They're going to the community college. They're going to the local school like Memphis State in Memphis. And meanwhile, kids with lower ACT and SAT scores are going to places like Vanderbilt or Harvard or Yale because of programs like this. There's just not money available. A lot of white working class and lower middle class kids couldn't afford to go to Harvard or Yale, which costs around $60,000 to $65,000 a year now, even if they got in. And one, they've got a hurdle to get in. Two, if they do get in, they find out that all the scholarship money is being commandeered for the benefit of minorities. That's one thing. The second thing is, it's helping make America non-competitive with the rest of the world. Believe me, the Chinese, the Japanese, and the Russians do not ascribe to this affirmative action mentality, and as a result, our second and third stringers are competing against their first stringers with predictable results, and that is one of the reasons why the sun seems to be setting on America's economic dominance in the world.
Well, Keith...
Go ahead, Bill.
I've always noticed that the quest for equality, the price for equality is a drop in quality. And, of course, it seems to me that if the big elite schools bring in enough of these underqualified candidates and underqualified students, inevitably the quality of the education at these elite schools must suffer. There's no way that a premium can be maintained at any college, university, business, corporation, anything, when equality takes precedence over quality, or equality takes precedence over quality. Is there any, chance that the people, the trustees, the people who run these schools and these elite academies and these elite institutions are going to see that eventually, they're eroding their own foundation?
Well, I've heard it said before that the only sound that a liberal fears is the sound of a closing purse. If it actually stopped money coming in, they might pay attention to it. But otherwise, you have to remember, these people are doctrinaire leftists now. Cultural Marxism has made its long march through the institutions, and one of the institutions they have marched through is higher education in America and through the charitable foundations. So you would be hard-pressed to find a person who has some type of instinctive aversion to affirmative action in these positions where the decisions are made. But it is having that effect that you're talking about, and the Sonia Sotomayor nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court by President Obama is a perfect example. She supposedly is at the top of her class. You know, she was number one in school. She was summa cum laude at Princeton University, where she went to undergraduate school, and then she was an editor on the Yale Law Review. But according to the law clerks and other judges that work with her on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, she is not a stellar judge or legal mind. Basically, what it shows is the corruption in the grading process that is now beset places like Harvard and Yale and Princeton because of this desire to promote minorities at all costs, and as a result, she's going to be standing for a position for the U.S. Supreme Court based on basically a fraudulent transcript.
Why not? We've got a president who has a fraudulent birth certificate. Why not a Supreme Court candidate who has a fraudulent transcript from college? Isn't that make my point, though? That we lower the standards for the sake of equality. We lower quality for the sake of equality.
Yeah, well, quality is the enemy of equality. I mean, equality is the enemy of quality, I think, is what you're saying. And,
exactly.
I would certainly agree. And it's, I believe it goes back to Thomas Jefferson, who said, equal men are never free and free men are never equal.
Before I ask my question, I want to remind our audience that in the next hour, we're going to be opening the phone lines, and you can call in at 1-866-986-6397. Again, that's 866-986-6397 to be on the political cesspool with Bill Rowland and Winston Smith. Keith, What do you say to the multitude of European-American parents out there who have become so deluded by Marxist political correctness that they actually applaud these kind of programs, knowing that these programs are taking money away from their own children and giving it to children who really have no business accessing them? What do you say to those parents who applaud, to those European-American parents who applaud this sort of thing?
Well, I would tell them to snap out of it. You know, a lot of white people have taken the position that somehow resisting the long march through the institutions of the left is futile, and they're just going to sit back and somehow they're going to finagle a good deal for themselves and their offspring. Well, let me tell you, folks, it ain't going to happen. Unless you're incredibly wealthy, or unless your child can be at the top of the top for getting into places like Harvard and Yale, they're not going to get these, elite college and university positions, and they're not going to get elite positions in the law or in medicine or in government later on. You know, it doesn't matter whether you have a stratospheric IQ. If you went to the University of Iowa, you're not going to get Paul Wolfowitz's job or Scooter Libby's job or Richard Pearl's job in the government. And you're not going to be considered a candidate for the U.S. Supreme Court. Look what happened to poor Harriet Myers. Not that I thought she was a particularly good candidate, but everybody savaged her because she just went to SMU Law School. You're not going to be considered appropriate timber for a position on the U.S. Supreme Court, for example, unless you went to Harvard, Yale, University of Chicago, Stanford, or some school in that rank. And if they keep us out, you know, they call these schools the breeding stables for America's leadership. And that's pretty true. And if it is true, then you know who's going to be leading America in the 21st century, and it's not going to be white people.
Before we go to our break, let's take a quick call from our listeners. Rob in New Orleans, you're on the Political Cesspool with Bill Rowland, Winston Smith, and Keith Alexander. How are you, Rob? Rob, are you there?
Do we have Rob on the phone?
I know what happened. There must be a cultural Marxist somehow blocking Radio Free America here.
There's a cultural Marxist running the FCC, probably. But in any event, Keith, you know, I'll have one slight disagreement with you on that. And what I'll say is this. I don't think that it matters as much if you graduate from Harvard or Yale if you're a white man, that you're still going to be at a disadvantage when it comes to competing with a non-white graduate from Harvard, Yale, or
We got to go to break, Bill and Keith. I'm sorry.
1 hour down.
Keith, hang on for our next segment.
Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and said, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. Jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the A.